welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for July 21st. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and joining me in cyberspace is a happy, warm, but chilled Jim Allen. What's happening?
Warm but chilled? That's shaken but not stirred? I don't know.
You're
warm but chilled.
Yeah, you're not too hot because it's not that hot today, but you're chilling at home.
Okay, good. I'm glad you explained that for the listeners because it'll take me.
I had to explain it for you.
Well, I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out on my own in about a week. I'll let the listeners in if they haven't got it next week. Okay, but since you provided the subtitles, we're all cool. We're all good.
Subtitles. All right, we are all good, and we've got an interview this week with Chad Huffman of the Lotte Marines. We're going to discuss the All-Star Series and more, so let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, it's a trivia question from Jim Week, which I know John really enjoys.
Yeah, and you actually told me what the topic was going to be, and I was so fearful and worried about it that I tried to, you said bone up, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to try to study, and then I forgot.
Well, that's my routine. I was gonna plan to be ready, but I forgot to.
Right.
Okay.
All right, hit
now,
me.
Okay.
Not too now, hard, though.
No, not too hard. And not too far back in the before time, as we were saying the other day. Three players have stolen home in a Japan NPB All-Star game, but only once was it not part of a double steal.
You're kidding me, right?
No, it's very famous.
It's very famous.
I was covering that game for the Daily Yomiuri.
All right, that gives me a time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm supposed to guess who, not what year.
Well, the two are very closely connected, and the two are very important, and the timing of it happening and the circumstances under which it happened made it particularly famous.
Now, when you say famous,
mm-hmm.
What exactly do you mean? Like,
historically
everybody except
significant.
John knows it?
No, historically significant.
All right.
Okay, I'll give you the dead-on clue.
No, don't. Let me wade through this first, and then when I fall, you go ahead and pick me up and help
you
me.
You got to lose some weight if I'm already picking you up, John Gibson.
All right, let's see. Significant, a steal of home.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I'm going to rant about later. An All-Star game significant?
And the answer is
almost never.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that it's somebody who wasn't fast and shouldn't have been. Oh, no, they would have to be because you say it wasn't a part of a double. So it would have to be somebody with some speed. And
correct.
I'm going to say Tsuyoshi Shinjo.
Bingo.
What? I got it?
You got
that,
it.
That was an out of the blue, folks. I had no idea. Wow.
Okay,
I'm happy.
Now, why it was historically
now,
significant.
Now, what year is this, first of all?
Well, if you say anything about Japanese baseball being historically significant in an All-Star game, you have to think about what year was the year of turmoil in NPB.
Uh-huh, yeah, crickets. What year was the year of turmoil? The year that they had the strike.
Right. So this is the year that
the
Pacific League...
So this is 2004, but see, I was back in the States at that time.
Okay, this is the year that that NPB was basically trying to eliminate a Pacific League team. And the Pacific League and the All-Star game and all that history was about to get flushed down the toilet.
Mm.
And essentially, it was a case, it was like the Central League conspired to lose the All-Star Series.
Mm.
And they got beaten pretty bad in Nagoya, and the next day they went to Nagano. And in Nagano, Shinjo promised to hit a home run, bunt for a base hit, and I think, I don't remember if he promised to steal home or not, steal a base at least. He got thrown out trying to bunt for a base hit to lead off the game. He doubled twice and he stole home. And now after the game, the Central League catcher had to defend himself against accusations that he signaled Shinjo to try to score.
Oh, yeah. See, I would have missed all this because I was living in the States at the time, so I didn't see any.
Okay.
Won't start anything, but yeah.
And this catcher is the only player ever to hit for a cycle in the All-Star game, which is it's got to be my perfect stat because it's got a game which I don't care about and a stat I don't care about. But it's the perfect All-Star stat. I mean, the cycle in the All-Star game is fun. I mean, in every place else, it's just dead weight. Okay, and that was Atsuya Furuta. He basically waved Shinjo home and then afterwards said, no, I wasn't doing that.
He waved him home. Right this
basically,
way.
Basically, yeah, he was waving his hands. Come on, you can steal home.
Right. All right. Well, good. So the year was 2004 then.
Four. That is correct.
Excellent.
And it was, people were saying it could be the last All-Star game. So it was, in that sense, significant. Unfortunately, it wasn't the last.
Right. All right. Okay. Well, thank you for that. And I'm glad I got it right. And I don't know how. I really don't know how. So awesome. So on Wednesday of last week, I went out to QVC Marine Field. And I think longtime listeners know by now that I love players like Chad Huffman. We've talked about it. I love a guy who scraps and fights for every inch, every at bat, every opportunity, takes nothing for granted, is always given 100%, you know, no matter what the game situation is going on now. He's an outfielder with the Marines, and he's in his first year. And the day I went out there, I think, was the day after the Marines had actually announced that they had signed Alfredo Despaigne, a Cuban player who's going to be probably contributing to the scrappiness of Huffman, because he's going to have to fight even harder for at bats and for playing time and all that stuff. Now they've got six foreign guys on the roster. They've got, well, actually Despaigne is not on the roster yet, but he's signed. They've got Craig Brazell, Carlos Rosa, Luis Cruz, who we talked to earlier this season, Chad, and Seth Greisinger is still on the roster.
Seth?
Yeah, he's still there, and I made sure to check today to make sure he didn't have anything, because I haven't seen him. I only heard that he might pitch, but I really haven't seen anything about it. I haven't seen anything about him, but he's still on the roster.
Makes me want to go out to Urawa and see if he's still breathing.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's the case. So, I went out and we talked to Chad on Wednesday, like I said, and this is a guy who really never spent any significant time in the majors. He's got a 280 career average in the minors with 102 home runs in 849 games. I mean, nothing actually spectacular, not a beautiful, picturesque swing or anything, but the guy works hard. I've seen him make a couple plays. You know, you see the ball, if you're watching on TV and you see the ball and you think, oh, this has a good chance of being a hit. And he's scrambling and running and diving. And like you're going to hear in the interview, I say he manages to get dirt on his jersey or on his uniform in places, diving on the in places on the field where there's no dirt. He's that kind of guy, you know, and obviously at the Q, they've got artificial turf, so that doesn't get on his uniform. And yet this guy's uniform is dirty every game for some reason. And you'll hear him say in the interview, you know, he didn't feel like he had played it hard if his uniform wasn't dirty. So let's go ahead and have a listen to the conversation. All right, we're here with Chad Huffman of the Marines. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right, now it seems like your uniform is dirty, like even before the game starts. How do you describe yourself as a player?
You know, I describe myself as a player as just going out there and just giving all I got every day and playing the game the right way. You know, it's important to me is playing the game the right way in all aspects of the game.
I know, and like I said, you're diving all over the place, even in places where there's no dirt. It seems like you get dirt on your uniform. Like immediately, how does that happen?
I don't know. When I was a kid, when I was younger, I'd always, you know, be upset if I didn't have dirt on my jersey after the game was over. I'd feel like I had a bad game. So, looking back on it, my mom, I didn't realize how she had to do the laundry every day and how big of a pain that must have been for her.
Well, moms love doing that stuff. All right. Now, your start here in Japan was kind of slow. I think you started out going up and down, but you've been able to stay on the first team and contribute to some wins. So, how has that start been for you?
You know, it's it's definitely a different deal. As you're going up and down, it's you, when you get up here, you got it's a short opportunity. You got to have success early, you know. And luckily, it's a layup of getting some opportunities, and you know, just doing the best I can to help this team win.
I mean, what, not exactly the experience, but what was it like when you were brought up and then sent down?
It's minor leagues here is a lot different than the minor leagues back in the States. So it's that was kind of a big kind of surprise for me. Is just how every game's at 1 o'clock. There's not really a
in the minors
here. There's not gonna, you know, AAA back home. There's mascots and it's an event. It'd be just like a regular game. Besides, there's only, you know, 8,000 to 12,000 people. So it's definitely a different atmosphere in the minor leagues here than it is back home. So that was an adjustment.
All right, now what has been going well for you?
You know, I feel like this team is great. The team gets along, you know, and that's been like the biggest thing that I've enjoyed the most is just trying to get to know all these guys and being in a foreign country. I feel like that's important to be able to feel comfortable coming to the stadium because this is your life. So you spend the majority of your hours here. So I just feel lucky to be able to feel comfortable and welcome to the stadium.
Yeah, I meant what has been going well for you personally in terms of contributing to the team because you've been able to contribute. You've been able to get some big hits. I've seen you dive in for some balls in the outfield and making some good plays.
You know, the opportunity, you know, it's one of those things. Sometimes, you know, you get some good pitches to hit and you got to hit those. So, you know, that's kind of a big thing is, you know, is having opportunities to be able to dive for balls and be able to get good pitches to hit. You know, sometimes you can go a while without me able to get an opportunity to make a play. You know, I think this year is like maybe one game or two games where I didn't even get a ball hit to me. So you can't really contribute if you're not really having opportunities to.
I agree. Now, yeah, you mentioned that getting a good pitch to hit, and what would you say is the key to being a good hitter in Japan?
Being a good hitter in Japan, it's definitely an adjustment period from back in the States. So that's why I feel like there's a lot of guys that hit in America and come over here and struggle. And, you know, I still haven't figured it out yet, but what I've seen is from other guys, watching other guys that affects the sex here, is sitting on certain pitches and sitting on certain zones and when you get in them, hitting them, you know, because the pitchers here, they throw everything. For 0-0 count, bases loaded, full count, you name it. There's no really that much of a pattern. They just try to get you off balance.
Now, personally, what do you need to work on better? Is it something like hitting with two strikes or hitting behind the runners when there's guys on base, or is it pitch recognition? What is it for you?
Everything, really. You know, it's just you can never stop getting better at something. But you know, if I could pick one thing, to really get good at, and I think everybody would probably be to say the same thing, is hitting the scoring position. You know, because that's a big deal for helping teams win. So,
how do you do that?
Be selective. You know, at times, you know, I've also heard people, you know, guy on third base, you want to swing a little more aggressively because, you know, less than two outs and a guy on third base, you just got to hit a fly ball or just to get him in. So basically, it's kind of dictating the situation is getting a good pitch to hit or, you know, trying to be a little more aggressive and trying to get the ball in the outfield if the guy's on third base less than two outs.
All right. Well, we'll watch for that.
Hopefully, do it a bunch of times tonight.
All right. Now, I didn't pick this team to finish in the top three in the pennant race, but it's doing okay. Why are you guys doing this well?
You know, I think that we've been working hard, and I think the team's been kind of coming together. You know, I feel like everybody's on the same page as trying to figure out as far as, you know, what we need to do to win. And there's a lot of baseball left, so, you know, we got to keep grinding and keep going because, I mean, right at the All-Star break, there's a lot of baseball left. Anything can happen.
Well, try to look into the future and tell me how you guys end up getting, you know, maybe first place, second place, or third place.
You know, I definitely think we have an opportunity to get in the playoffs. And once you get in the playoffs, I'm a big believer in it's all about who's hot. I mean, it doesn't matter what you did in the season. Once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen. It happens in every year, in every sport, in every playoff situation. There's always a team that's in first place that struggles, and there's also a team that barely gets in and they win the whole thing. So, once
this team did that in 2000. 2010.
That's perfect. That's, you know, getting in is the number one priority, because once you get in, anything can happen.
All right. So now, what do you think of bringing video replay and expanding it here in Japan? Because there have been some calls in Japan that have been closed that probably could have been reversed or something. But what's your opinion of that aspect?
You know, I like the video replay personally. Just because, you know, you're out here, you want the calls to be right, because, you know, it can either affect the team's, you know, playoff berth or whatever it might be. But also, I don't want to eliminate the umpire factor of it, because as a game's not, you know, it was built on the umpires, and sometimes umpires are going to make mistakes, human error, which is part of the game as well. So I think there's also got to be a limit of how much video replay. But I think on certain things like the home runs and, you know, maybe, you know, some other major calls, I think it'd be a good idea.
Yeah, I, like I said, there was a play earlier this year involving Luis Cruz at second base, and I thought he was safe. I thought he never came off the bag, and they called him out. And probably it's hard to see, but some expanded replay would do the game good. Do you worry about it slowing the game now?
No. The reason why I say that is because I think they had success with it in American MLB, and they have a way of going about it that speeds it up. So, you know, I feel like that if it's done right, I think it can be very useful.
Okay. Now, the dugouts and bullpens emptied last night. You're in a foreign country. You're with some guys you can barely communicate with. What's your role, you feel, when things like that happen? You try to play peacemaker, or do you just try to go in and be a barking dog and be aggressive? What's your role?
You know, I feel like that's every situation's got to dictate itself. You know, it's last night I think more of a peacemaker atmosphere, but you never know. You know, there's, you know, it's one of those things that everything, the moment dictates it. You can't really go out there and plan what you're going to do, because everything happens so fast. And you know, luckily, you know, no one wants to ever get in a fight, or, you know, people get hurt, you know, people get missed games, and it's never a good thing. But when it does happen, you just got to, you know, be smart about it, and you know, hopefully nothing does. But if you do have to go after it, I'm definitely going to protect my teammates with everything I got.
Okay. All right. Now, we know that a lot of foreign players come over and they experience the strange oddities of Japanese baseball. What's something that's happened to you so far this year?
You know, some of the strange things, it's been, I'll tell you what, I've eaten a lot of foods here than I would never eat in America. Yeah, you know, I've eaten a lot of stuff. I don't even know the names of them, but they definitely look funky. But I ate them. They actually tasted, you know, all right. They were better than I thought they were going to be. I mean, I'll never eat them again, but it was better than I thought they were.
All right, well, we hope you guys will probably be better than we think you're going to be. That's what's happening to me. I didn't pick you guys to finish that high, but you're doing well, so good luck the rest of the way.
I appreciate it. Nice talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks again, Chad. It was really nice to sit down and chat with you. And I actually saw Luis Cruz there, and I was going to chat with him a little bit, because obviously when we talked before, I told you we talked for what seemed like 2 hours or something in that interview with him. But he had to get back out to the field, so we didn't get a chance to talk. Anyway, what caught your ear?
Well, you took the word pretty much out of my mouth, which is, I had a virus. That's probably kind of dangerous. But the word is scrappy.
Yeah.
You know, he fits right in with the Marines, because, you know, we've talked about the Marines a fair amount. I mean, we're talking to Cruz and Rosa,
right?
That it seems like, you know, when you look at the Marines, you see, oh, they're in fourth place, and they were in third place for a while.
Yes, they
were.
Yeah.
But you have to wonder how they've done it. Well, I guess what they do is...
I do every day, Jim. In fact, when they were doing it and they were in third place and sometimes second, I was wondering how they were doing it. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what they do is they don't give up, and every chance that they have, every game that they have the slightest little chance of winning, they're fighting for that win.
Yeah.
And then they get their heads beat in a lot. and they come back and they fight for, you know, they fight for a win. So, you know, they're like the, I don't know what, malicious newsboys on the street, you know, hey, get away from me. Get away. I don't want a paper. Get away from me.
Malicious newsboys.
Okay, I'll buy a damn paper. Just get out of here. Okay, so the, scrappy. You know, they about the only thing I could find the Marines are good at. They're not terrible, but they're kind of like below average at everything.
Mm.
And although their pitching is definitely below average.
Yeah.
They're okay at turning double plays.
Mm-hmm.
But their pitching is the worst in ERA. They've committed their fielding percentage is, I believe, the worst in the Pacific League.
Yeah, the ERA is highest in the Pacific League, and then of the 12 teams, they would be ranked ninth.
Right. So I kept thinking, so what do they do? Well, they don't hit very well, but they're scrappy, and they don't get on base a lot, but they are scrappy, and they don't pitch all that well, but they're pretty scrappy. They remind me of this, and he fits right in with that. He's like the ultimate Marine, the only guy, on the team. I mean, they have a couple of pitchers who we like. I mean, I like Carlos Rosen, and I like Narusse if he pitches well, and a couple of other guys who look, have good stuff, but have been up and down. But, the only player on the offense who's really any good is Katsuya Kakunaka. I mean, they have some guys who are pretty good. They're just not having good seasons.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say, because I like a lot of their guys. And I don't even know that Kakunaka is having that great a season. But
well, yeah, I mean, he's having his, 375 on base percentage, which is not great for him.
Yeah.
But it's best on the team. So they're like – this team is like the character from Full Metal Jacket. He berates the star was it Matthew Modine? He says to the platoon, he's ignorant, but he's got guts. And sometimes guts are enough. And in this case, guts are enough to keep you out of last place. Yeah. So that's the Marines.
Well, I mentioned that they were doing well, but I mean, that's relative to the standings. They're 8 games under 500 here at the All-Star break, and that's 5 back of the third place Fighters. But considering their rotation, I think that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, that they're, like I said, that they're not in last place is an accomplishment, because that's what they more or less, that's where they, by all rights, should be, but they're not.
Yeah.
And give them credit for that.
I do. I mean, guys like Takahiro Fujioka, we expected a little bit more from him, and Yoshihisa Naruse, like you said, who I think goes dropped down to the farm again. And I wanted to talk to people about the catching situation, but Takeshi Nakamura didn't seem to want, he's turned into a surly old guy. He just runs around grunting,
he's been like that for a while.
Squinting at everybody, He's not very approachable, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, just tell him you remember his birthday.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Always remember.
That always helps. Yeah, here's a card. But yeah, this team, you're right. I look at them and I kept looking at them at the beginning, and I'm like, how are they getting through with this kind of pitching? I mean, and again, they have a rookie, Ishikawa, who's pitching fairly well, but rookies in second half baseball, in my mind, I don't want to count on that guy to be my top pitcher, but he's been standing up to the test so far. He hasn't really dropped off at all. And here they are in fourth place with a chance, just like Chad said, hey, look, all we have to do is get into the playoffs. And it was 2010, I believe.
Mm.
The Marines got in. They were third place. They survived a couple series, and then they found themselves in the Japan series. And that was just that year that the Pacific League was pretty much better than the Central League, and they were able to win that series. It took them 7 games and some extra innings to get through it, I think. But
we had one tie.
Yeah, and it was quite a series, quite a memorable series. I remember saying, "Okay, man, whatever. You guys can have it, man. If it's taking this much, just take the
thing." Yeah, there was some late nights at the pre-queue.
Yeah, the pre-queue. But I like what he said about, well, I don't know about liking it. I found it really interesting that he said, when I asked him what he can improve on, he said, well, everything. But then he said, hitting with runners in scoring position. And I don't know how you get better at that. Now, he said being selective, and I mean, swinging that strike is always a successful approach. I don't care where you are and what you're trying to do. As long as you're swinging at strikes, you have a better opportunity. But I don't really know how you get better at hitting with runners in scoring position.
Rummy Channel will tell you.
Uh-huh. But this is one of the topics we discussed in the office pre-JBW. We used to always talk about these things. And I mean, I think you're going to hit what you're going to hit, basically. I don't know if you can get better.
Well, it's about, and I talk to coaches a lot about this, and it is, I think there are adjustments you can make, because there are certain situations there are certain pitches they're going to be trying to avoid.
Mm.
And so you want to be looking for pitches, pitches that you want to be looking for certain pitches and be wary of the other ones. You know, you have to have a good approach in the sense of, you know, avoid doing what they're trying to do, but taking what you get.
Yeah.
So I think that's a knowledge and understanding thing. And I think the people can improve on it, but
really, because
I think you can, if you're very careful, if you're good at making that adjustment. And I think it's hard if, let's put it this way. There's only so much you can know about this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically once you know it and once you're on it, then you're not going to get better. If you're bad at it, you can certainly improve. Let's put it that way. If you're bad at it, if you're getting out on certain pitches in certain situations, but you know, it's a case of you have to be aware of how people are trying to get you out and make the adjustments you can, with the tools you got. No, I think you can. I just think it's a limited improvement. You're not going to, you can't be Ted Williams when you're not.
Yeah, I understand that.
But you can have a better approach in those situations by being more aware of what teams are trying to do. Now, Ramichand will say that basically Wakamatsu told him that in these cases, the catchers are going to try to do this to you. And these are the pitches you're going to have to be, you're going to have your best opportunity with. You're going to have your best opportunity going the other way in these cases, blah, 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 depending on the count and the situation. So yeah, I'm a firm believer that it is possible. You can't turn lead into gold, but you can make it, you can do a little better.
Yeah. All right, and then I hear the phrase, we hear this a lot, and I've heard some other announcers get on people about this particular phrase, but playing the game the right way. And I understand what it means in general, but I think at the same time it has a different meaning for each player with their particular skill sets. For instance, I would say that for Yoshifumi Okada, the speedster, to try and swing for homers all the time isn't the right way for him to play. And then having Saburo Omura trying to think, let's try to get 50 sacrifices this season, and I'll try to bunt for base hits. I think that's the wrong way for him to play. But in general, I think this all-encompassing phrase is just a way to say I play hard,
I think that is, in essence, that you don't take the game. You have respect for the game. You have your respect for your teammates. You have respect for your opponents. And you take every opportunity you can to beat them.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot of, yeah. I mean, I think it depends also what your cultural background is. Playing the game the right way in Japan probably includes practicing 3 hours a day in the sweltering heat.
Yeah. And fielding a lot of extra ground balls.
Sure.
And fly balls. Yeah, I don't know. I hear that phrase and I totally understand it, but I don't know that I know how it applies to everybody. And in this case, we look at Chad and we can see that he works hard and he works hard at everything. So yeah, I see him playing the right way, but is that necessarily the case for other guys? I don't know. Yeah.
How come is it all the guys in NPB named Chad are all from Texas?
A Texas Christian guy, yeah, I don't know, but...
we had Chad Allen, he was a Texan as well.
Having previously lived in Texas as a youngster, I'm always, in San Antonio, I'm always, it's always nice to meet another person from there. Now, he also said we talked about the replay thing, and he said this aspect of the game, he basically mentioned the human element again, so you can't take that out of the game, and... The game is built around the umpires, and I agree that we need them to make decisions, and we can't ask machines or technology to call balls and strikes and all that other stuff. But I do think, and he mentioned major calls, and I would define the major calls as maybe catch or trap, some close plays at the plate, and safer out at some of the bases. Those are obviously out calls, out or safe at anything involving a run. Home runs and all that stuff, we already, whether it's fair or foul, we already checked that. So we expand replay to maybe include the trap, because we did see a play the other day, or at least I saw a play the other day where there was a trap involved. And so
Well, they do have one replay in Japan that they don't have in the majors, or at least they don't have specifically in the majors. They have an automatic replay, and any ball hit that's caught against the wall.
To see if it hit the wall first.
Yeah, to see if it hit the wall first, or it was trapped against the wall, not entirely in the glove. So.
Yeah. So I just think if we're going to talk about replay, which we're going to do later on in the podcast with a question, a listener question, but I would like to see them expanded, and I don't know that the U.S. Method or the way that they're doing it now in the States, I don't like it. It's wasting too much time, and the manager shouldn't have to come out and challenge. It should be reviewed automatically, and if there's a problem, just change it.
Well, John will offer his services to review all these things.
I will, because I'm really good. You see me on Twitter. That was out. That was fair. And that's a strike. Next.
Exactly.
He swung.
You're out.
There'll hardly be any check swings if I'm calling those things. Everybody's out.
Well, oh, really?
He swung. Yeah. Oh, heck yeah. Hey, look, those guys swing 70% of the time on those things, so. At least.
As somebody who doesn't actually count knows that they swing 75% of the time. That's why I love it. Okay, let's move on.
All right, so in that series, though, this was the question. This is why I asked the question about the little melee or the get-together at the mound. I don't think it was a melee, but I think it was the first game Jason Standridge threw on Monday, and seemed like he was trying to pitch inside aggressively to some guys, and he hit three guys in one inning. Mm. And the final guy he hit was Craig Berzel, and he hit him in the head and ended up knocking him out of the game. And
wow.
Craig actually got deactivated on Tuesday and wasn't around.
Yeah, I don't like to hear that that expression, getting hit in the head, and Craig Berzel, because what happened to him in his first year with Cebu ended in 2008.
Yeah.
He was hit in the head and has suffered a serious concussion.
Yeah.
And ended his season. He didn't get to play in any of the postseason. His head was bleeding for several days.
Yeah. So the pitch from Standard, it actually clipped his shoulder on the way to hitting him in the head, so it wasn't full on. But then Standard got ejected. Tensions were up. And the next night there was this base clearing incident. Just a meeting, just a little chat. Nothing to see here, kind of a situation, and the guys went down.
Wow.
But then the next night, the reliever for SoftBank, Morty, hit one batter. But it wasn't until the third game, and the Marines were leading. Well, they ended up winning 13-0.
Mm-hmm.
I think
Tapia really nice, Pudia, nice
yeah,
color.
Shoelace. Well, we call him Shoelace here on the show.
No, John does.
Oh, okay, I do, and you just respond to
it. Call him Buddy.
Shoelace hit a batter. Finally, for the Marines, but I just think the Marines, they're battling to get back to 8 games under 500. They can't go around hitting people and putting guys on base. They'll lose a game. That'll cost them a game. They just couldn't retaliate. That was my whole thing, is they couldn't retaliate, and they didn't when they went out there to meet on the mounds. I don't think anybody went out there with the intention of doing anything, because they can't afford to lose players either, whether it's to injury or whatever.
There's always a bunch of more average guys around on the bench.
Wow.
I mean, this lineup is so average.
That's just oof.
I don't mean
you're
to be,
right, but I mean, this is why I picked them. I didn't pick them to finish high and in the Pacific League standings. And they're convincing me. They stayed in a lot longer than I expected them to be. I thought if they were going to do anything, they were going to sink to the bottom, maybe make a run late. But
they're
running late now. They started out well. They're hitting a bad patch, but I expect them to come back some way, somehow. And we don't know what Despaigne is going to be for them, but. Obviously, Ulieski Gruliel for the Yokohama Bay Stars has been a shot in the arm, although he was deactivated on Sunday, so we'll see how that goes for them. But, of course, Tony Blanco is going to come back. What do you think about – you want to move on to the All-Star game?
About the Marines, who could find more things to say about that exciting team?
They only need pitching. They only need a little bit better defense. They only
and
need
some
a little
more offense.
More offense, and they'll be fine.
That's right. A little fielding could be a little sharper, and they'll be all right.
Well, we appreciate Chad sitting down with us. That was fun.
Thank you, Chad. And hopefully we'll all get out and see you guys play.
Yeah. All right, so let's go to the All-Star game. Let's talk about the All-Star series, I should say. Now, first, let me rant about it because I really think...
Yeah, John needs to do this every year. This is just the sort of disclaimer.
A disclaimer, yeah.
We need a disclaimer. This is John's annual rant about the All-Star game. Go, John.
Okay. One game, people. One game. That's all we need. Is that enough? That's probably more than enough. I mean, there's no novelty anymore. And the good thing was this year... Game 2 had some electricity in the air, and I think that even the players who were blasé about the Game 1 and were just going out there to have fun and joke around kind of got into Game 2 at the beginning, which was kind of interesting. But then, that being said, Game 2 was the Shohei Ohtani show, and I'm not gonna, every week for the past, I don't know, month, I've been having the Shohei Ohtani corner.
Little fanboy corner.
And I promised not to do it again, and then what does he do? He makes me talk about him. I'm a victim.
He's got the John Jones, man.
I'm a victim.
Yeah, that's...
It's not my fault. I'm trying to quit.
Yeah, there's a fixation there for sure.
There's going to be an intervention, I'm pretty sure, either.
Pretty much, yeah. Someone's going to show up next week when we're taping the podcast and say, sorry, we have to edit out all references to Shohei Ohtani.
Well, I don't know. He just made Game 2 very memorable and fun to watch. Mm. And let's take a look at it. I want to start with Game 2 because that was the more interesting one anyway.
Mm.
Shohei Ohtani throws a pitch that goes 162 kilometers per hour. That's 100.6 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. And now here's the thing to remember, and I think I saw some things on the homepage because former MPB players Aaron Gile and Josh Whitesell were throwing out their 2 cents on the homepage. And I'll have you remember when Mark Kroon threw his 162-kilometer pitch, it was also at Koshien.
Mm.
And I'll tell you the batter, and I think you remember the situation. The batter was Norihiro Akahoshi. Mm-hmm. And he made contact on that. I think he fouled it off as well. Mm. So it's not all that difficult to get the bat on the balls, as Aaron and Josh were saying. If you're expecting it, you're sitting on it, all you have to do is find the location and start early and get the bat to it. So Ohtani threw two pitches at 162 to tie Mark Kroon's record. Now, apparently it's not official.
It's not an official record. It's a media record.
Right. Well, I don't care either way. I just wanted to know how to report it. I was hoping it was official. And I think if he hit it once, he's going to do it again. So I'm not really worried about it. But I just wanted to know if it was official or not and how to report it, because I was obviously doing a blog post about it. I was tweeting about it. So I threw it out there, and we got some really interesting responses on the homepage. You can look at that thread. But Ohtani fouled it off. Now, Abe took the pitch and it was an easy take for him, too. It wasn't even that close. And he didn't offer at it. It was a ball. And Saturday night, this was the game. The Pacific League won 12-6. Yuki Yanagita of the SoftBank Hawks was the MVP. 4 hits for him, including a 2-run homer. It was a great game in that respect. It was pretty much over early after Ohtani throws one inning and leaves the mound. But I think that I thought this was the one thing, is I thought the managers did a really good job of creating some hype for that second game, which is usually a snooze fest for me. Mm. By getting Ohtani in.
The second game's not too bad, actually. It's when they have the third game that the sleeping sickness sets in. Because then guys are like, come on, first pitch. Anybody doesn't swing at a pitch anywhere near the zone, second and the first pitch, we're going to beat you up after the game.
Right. Yeah, we got to get out of here. But yeah, to match him up against Shintaro Fujinami of the Tigers I just thought that was a great marketing situation, and it made the game really interesting. So yeah, obviously the Pacific League came back and won the second night after getting shut out 7-0 in Friday's game one in Cebu. So I don't know. Here's the other thing. The Willie Mopeña home run. Have you ever seen a ball hit that far at Koshien in a game? I have never.
It went not even on the hottest. It hit just a little bit. There's a corridor there's an aisle, mm-hmm. I guess, halfway up those very massive stands. I mean, I've seen it pretty close to that distance in right field. You know, if the winds happens to be blowing out, it doesn't normally, but sometimes it'll blow out to right field. It's normally easier to hit home runs left hand or right handed at Koshien, but yeah, I've never seen one hit to left field that far, and it was hit halfway back in the stands, which is about I'm going to say about 45 or 50 rows, and it's fairly deep, except down for the foul poles are short. But to straightaway, it wasn't quite straightaway. It was a little, towards that way. But it was pretty deep.
It was incredible. That was.
Well, Yanagita's wasn't much worse. Yanagita's hit it about 10 or 15 rows back in dead center, which is probably just about as far. And he hit it on a line.
It was nice. It was nice. Of course, and my complaint, obviously, with the two games is that you don't have the novelty. And now, here's the thing: in the second game, you had Ohtani pitch one inning, mm-hmm. and then a star pitcher, Chihiro Kaneko of the Buffaloes, pitches one inning. Mm. But then a guy who's been struggling recently, Takahiro mm-hmm. Norimoto of the Eagles, pitches two innings. So that mm-hmm. didn't make sense. And then a guy who's borderline, Igarashi, although I guess his numbers are all right, Igarashi of the Hawks, he pitches an inning, and then Dennis Arfate pitches an inning. And I mean, you know, then at the end it's Fukuyama out there, and I'm like, this guy's on the All-Star team, and he's got two innings? You know, this is why I don't want this game to be dragged out, or, you know, have two games. Because now we're just throwing guys out there just because we have to get the innings in. And not everybody, you know, a few people might throw two innings, but nobody's going longer than that.
Well, there was an interesting suggestion Bill James made the other day, which was regarding the MLB All-Star Game. Look, you got 15 teams in a league. You pick one player from each team, and you let them go at it. You know, and then the best players play. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and there's not, you know, and then you get to actually see people play. You know, we get to see Willie Mays. I mean, in my case, I used to get to see Willie Mays bat four times and Hank Aaron bat four times, and it was fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, this sort of revolving door, the MLB has become a little bit of a caricature, but not as much as Japan.
Yeah. Well, and then game one was fish night. I'll just call it
was
fish
indeed.
Night. It was, the Carp players just kind of took over. I think six of them were in the starting order.
You know, I like that because
it was cool. It was really nice. I thought
what I liked about it was Hara said, "I'm going to go with the fans lineup," which the only thing was he inserted Motonobu Tanishige as a starting catcher instead of Abe, but otherwise it was basically top to bottom. It was the lineup the fans picked.
Mm.
So you know, he needed a DH, and the Central League fans don't get to pick one. So he had Valentin DH, and he had his teammate from the Swallows, Yuhei Takai, play right field. But, you know, basically he said, you know, the Carp fans voted in their team. Good for them. We're going to put them on the field. I love that. Yeah. And the Carp delivered, man.
Yeah, it was nice. 7-0, and Brad Eldred had three hits, hit a home run. That essentially put the game away. Kenta Maeda was the starter. He pitched really well. Lions ace Takayuki Kishi also pitched really well, and I think he was perfect over two innings.
He was.
I tweeted out some of his comments after he pitched, and you know, it was a fairly ho-hum kind of a game. Again, when the score gets kind of open like that, it was 3-0 early. The Central League added a run in the fourth and then two in the seventh, and it was pretty much change of channels. And then before we could basically change the channels, I think the broadcast went off on TV.
It cut off in the seventh inning, and then Sahi Television got so many complaints, they promised they wouldn't do it the next night, but they did cut it off after 9:30.
Yeah, they wouldn't do it as early.
They cut it off in the ninth inning instead of the seventh.
Yeah. So it was good, pretty harmless. I think I tweeted after after game one that because the Central League won game one, that the Pacific League was almost a guarantee that the Pacific League would win game two, and it did. So no surprise there. But yeah, I guess pretty fun. But the memorable thing I think will be Ohtani's It's a non-record.
It's a
his non-record of 162 on the gun.
What I don't like about All-Star games is just that, is that, you know, you're trying, it's a show-off thing in Japan. And, I want to see people trying to win. And so, you know, I don't want to see a guy throw 21 of his 23 pitches as fastballs to see how high he can hit the radar gun. To me, that's not baseball. You know, it's a mockery. It's not playing the game the right way.
It's not playing the game the right way, but I mean, it doesn't mean very much. So I don't know how we could get them to play it like it means something.
And well, on the Facebook, Anthony, is he in Sydney or Melbourne? Anthony Pang said, wait, it is important because the team that wins the series gets the first open pick in the Japan amateur draft in November.
Yeah.
So the worst, what that means is the worst team in the Central League this year will get the 13th over, will get actually the first free pick because the first 12 are lottery picks. You know, nobody has an advantage.
Right.
So, they'll get the 13th and the worst, basically every Central League team moves up one spot and every Pacific League team moves back one spot.
Back.
Go back.
Yes.
Take a step back, guys.
All right. So, yeah, it basically doesn't mean that much. All right. A couple of notes before we move on to the question. The Giants are going to be acquiring 20-year-old right-hander Hector Mendoza. He's a Cuban player, and that would make him the fourth Cuban in-season acquisition to a Japanese team this year. I don't know how significant that is. We'll have to see what he does for them, but that essentially, I think that means Chris Seddon will never see another first team appearance, or maybe.
Well, I don't think. I wonder. I wonder if it's a it's more of a tryout. Yeah. They're going to see how he pitches. He's 20 years old. He throws hard. He doesn't have a lot. He wasn't among the league leaders in the Serie Nacional last season, so he didn't pitch all that much. So I don't know, other than he's a big guy who throws hard.
All right. And Shuichi Murata is still looking for home run number 300, so we'll still look out for that one and discuss it when it happens. So let's go now to fielding questions. All right, Dave in Baltimore, we held this question over from last week. So he says, he wrote this in for last week's show. You and Jim talked about the issue that catchers have been breaking into MPB, that teams are reluctant to give them playing time until the pitchers trust them. But the pitchers won't trust them if they can't get playing time, assuming that I understood you guys correctly. Is that why there's a bunch of guys who started off as catchers but then moved to other positions? Offhand, I was able to come up with Akira Eto, Michihiro Ogasawara, and Kazuhiro Wada.
Well, I think that's part of the reason. And the kind of, certainly in the case of Ogasawara, we had a guy who could really hit, but really wasn't a catcher. He was basically a utility infielder.
Mm-hmm.
First base, third base, catcher, you name it. And he basically came up as a pinch hitting first baseman. So he was never a catcher, of more than a few games at the top team. But yeah, it's a really standard. Wada's case is different. Wada was, like Koichi, Koichi Sekikawa Akihiro Yano, in that he was a pretty good catcher, but he was behind an established veteran, Stomu Ito. And the only place he could play and they could get his bat in his lineup, he was basically the Lions' fifth outfielder in the late 90s. When Ito started winding down his career and in 2001, Wada was either 2000 or 2001, Wada was Matsuzaka's main catcher. And I think Wada was Matsuzaka was never better. Than when Wada was catching him.
Right.
I think he was he was really good at handling him. But Wada basically was a heck of a hitter, and trying to make him a regular catcher was taking him, you know, and having him sit on the bench because Ito was number one. wasn't helping and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, everybody's story is a little different, but you're right. This is this long tail of guys who are basically hitters whose careers are being held up by the fact that their position is catcher. And a lot of them never make it. I don't think Eto ever caught in the Central League. He was probably a minor league, but those guys who did, like Koichi Sobe and so on and so forth, and the guys I've already mentioned, there's just a legion of them. Now, the interesting thing about catcher is that I did a study a few years ago, and I found out that an inordinate number of catchers are born from January to March.
Oh, I remember when you did that. Yeah, didn't you write a story about it as well?
I did indeed.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, those are the 3 months of the year. They're the end of the last 3 months before the school year starts. And those kids basically go through school being nearly competing against their schoolmates or the people in their same class who are almost a year older than them. As a result, in the NPB draft, you see this result in essentially every professional sport around the world. The NPB draft, about 40% of the kids are born from April to June, and about 30%, I should say, maybe 35% are July to August, and the end of the year is about a quarter. And then about 10% come from March to January, but there's about as many catchers born March to January as there are any other month. Mm. Basically, these guys turn to catching because they may be smaller, they may not be as good because they're less developed, but nobody wants to catch. If you can catch, you can get playing time.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys grow up and they turn out to be pretty good players who happen to be catchers.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway, that was that story.
That was an interesting story. I remember when you did that. Now, I just thought what's kind of strange is, well, it's not strange. I guess it's good because Ryota Imanari with Hanshin, you would think they would just let him catch because they don't really have – they didn't have – when they started this season, they didn't have anybody who really had the job.
Well, Fuji got hurt and Hidaka proved to be useless.
Exactly. They didn't have anybody who really had the job or exactly. owned the job or made it their own, and yet they didn't put him behind the plate. They wanted to get his bat in the lineup, so they were shifting him around and getting him into the lineup. And then all of a sudden, this kid, or this guy, I shouldn't call him a kid, Umeno.
Plumfield.
Yeah, here's a rookie, and he just turned 23 in June. And he's coming on strong, and he's playing well. So, but you would think that Imanari would just come out of camp, and they'd just make him the catcher. So maybe they see something in Imanari, and they like his bat so much that they're hoping maybe he could take over at third base, I think.
Well, I think because they look at Umeno and they say, well, the guy's going to hit 200, so we don't want an outfielder hitting 200. We'll have a catcher hits 200.
Makes sense.
He just hits a lot of home runs.
Yeah. All he does is hit home runs.
all he does is hit for power.
So,
I mean, he's the I don't know what character of a catcher. You know, he's a 200 hitting guy who hits all, you know, 2/3 of his hits are for extra bases.
He fits the profile.
Mm.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, we see it happening here, and I think that the catcher skipper Dragons are transitioning to moving Tanishike away from catching so much and trying to find somebody to do it. And I think he's a good.
Are they using a pry bar to do that?
No, I think they're using his bat because he's not.
Can we borrow this? Sure.
Sure, I'm not doing anything with it. All right, so
Dan. Yeah, you did something with it in the All-Star game, man.
That was an accident. That was a cookie. All right.
He's the oldest player to ever get a hit in the All-Star game.
Yeah, I didn't even tweet that. That shouldn't count. All right, David, one more question. He said, I was watching the Buffalo-Hawks game earlier today, and who knows what day this was. And he said it was morning for him, obviously, because he lives in Baltimore. And there was a play where the Buffaloes attempted to convince the umpires that a Hawks runner on third had left early on a lineout. And the TV coverage seemed to have only one angle on the play, so the broadcast couldn't show any other footage to make it clear if the Buffaloes had a legitimate case to make. I think I've heard some talk about MPB establishing a replay system similar to the one introduced in MLB this past season. Is the quality of TV cameras available in MPP broadcast sufficient to allow such a system?
Well, sure it is, because the system in the majors is if you don't have a definitive answer, you stick with what it is on the field. And so,
well, I also think, yeah, they have.
So the answer is obviously yes.
Well, they have X number of cameras, though, too. I think they have, yes.
Right,
I think you can implement that. Yeah. You can say, we're going to put in 20 cameras in these locations, and then every park has to be set that way.
But the point is, if you have it, you have it, and if you don't, you don't. Because you could have 12 cameras, and it doesn't mean you're going to get a definitive look at it.
I hear you. I think the question here is more about the cameras, not the specific look. Because if you have X number of cameras, then you can have the system. Now, whether it gives you the look or not that you're looking for, or that you need to call as a specific play.
Well, you could get the look with one camera
if it's in the right spot.
But my point is, you're better with a system. Now, as we spoke before the show, you know, there are issues with that. I mean, and if you don't have many cameras, you don't want to challenge because, you know, in the U.S. system, because there's a good chance they're not going to see it. But, if you have a better system, if you have a system that says, yes, we can check, and if it looks on TV like it's definitely wrong, let's change it. Okay, do you need – how many cameras do you need to say if we have a better camera, if we have a better view? The answer is one.
Well, yeah, how many do you need? But let's say the minimum or the quota for the camera angles is, or cameras, period, is 20. We need 20 cameras.
They don't have 20 cameras.
I'm just saying, all right, let's put 15. Whatever the number is.
They don't even have 15. They've probably got 10 to 12 at the most.
Well, I don't know, but I'm not going to – I don't know. I can't speak on that, but I can just say –
I can't either, but how many – views do you see? You don't see 20.
Well, you don't see 20, but I mean, let's say you have 4 cameras for every base at least, so that's 16. And that, because you got to get all 4 sides of the base, you can't just have one angle of the base.
But they don't.
Well, anyway, let's just say that maybe 15. If you have 15, at least 15 cameras, then we can implement the system. Why is it ridiculous?
That's ridiculous. You could implement it if you had 3 cameras.
But then you have less of an opportunity to see to have it from a different angle.
But what you're saying is, it's like saying it's not going to be close to perfect, so let's not do it. You have one camera; it's better than what they've got.
I don't know that we're arguing the same thing, because I'm just saying if you have more cameras, you have more of an opportunity to have an angle.
Correct.
Whereas, so that you need X number of cameras to get in, to have the possibility of seeing that angle. Now, whether you're going to see it or not.
I'm saying this. Every camera you add is a benefit. One camera is better than what they have now. Correct? Which is essentially no replay.
Right, but they don't have any replay, so one camera is.
One camera is an improvement. So why are you saying, let's not do it unless we have 15 cameras?
I'm not saying let's not do it unless there's 15. I'm saying let's establish what we need, a minimum for each stadium, or for all stadiums, a minimum number of cameras.
My answer would be 3. I mean, minimum's 1. And you know, they've all got more than 1. Every game's broadcast has got more than that. So I would say, implement a system, but know that those are the limitations.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we're playing Yahtzee here and we're trying to get six dice to all fall on the same side. We want to get it right,
but you can only you're in every situation. You're only going to have so much access to video. You only have so many views of this play. But I'm saying 1 is better than 0.
You're saying the use of 1 is better than 0.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm not arguing that.
You're not arguing that. So you're saying you don't use the system if you only have 1 camera. So you are arguing that 1 is not better than 0.
No, I'm saying that yes, using 1 is better than not using any.
Correct. Okay.
But that using a minimum of whatever they prescribe is better than using the 1.
Okay, I'm good with that. Yeah, if they can get 3 and 5. Okay, I mean, if they can get 5 or 10, that's fine. But if they can't get 5 or 10, then go with 1.
Well, I'm just saying establish a minimum so that it's at least the parameters are there for every ballpark, and then go from there.
Yeah, I mean, if I would go with what can we do and start from there instead of saying let's have 15 and say, well, we can't do it, so let's not. So, okay, I hear what you're saying. You want to set up a system, and you want to set up a minimum, and I would say set a minimum that every stadium can manage.
Okay, whatever the minimum is.
Yeah, if it's 3, that's fine. If it's 1, that's fine too.
Whatever the minimum, I'm there. Okay. Too. All right.
Okay.
Guys, you can chime in at yakyujohn@gmail.com or leave us a note on the Facebook page, just like Josh Whitesell and Aaron Guile did. And we'll talk to you next week. We're still not arguing.
We've stopped arguing. We edited all that arguing out. So you missed the good stuff.
All right. All right. Love you, buddy. Enjoy your baseball.
We'll talk to you next week.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.